There would be sharp things between us on that account, if no other. One thing I must do is resign as prebendary of Barchester.
Oh, but why? Will not people think it very odd?
People will think much worse of my conduct than that.
But you have done nothing that is unjust or dishonourable.
At the very least, Fanny, I have touched pitch and become defiled. I will resign. The gift was Sowerby's, and I should never have accepted it. Oh, how that man has made me suffer. I can only hope and pray that he may suffer for it in return, in the next world, if not in this.
Dearest, no. No, do not wish him evil. You must not. He has his own sorrows. You can be sure of that.
You see, Nathaniel, I have something to tell you which is worth celebrating. Your very good health.
Thank you. Well?
Well, Nat, Miss Dunstable has pondered over our suggestion.
Your suggestion.
And she has finally agreed to it.
Has she now?
She's got all the details worked out. And the upshot is that Chaldicotts will become hers, just as it was previously the Duke's. But that you will continue to live there. And if the place is well managed, as Miss Dunstable will no doubt ensure that it is, there is no reason why Chaldicotts cannot remain your home for the rest of your life.
I must, I think, go along with this plan.
You must indeed. But there's more to it yet. She wants to help you in the election. Financially, I mean. It's not pure altruism on her part.
Harriet, I didn't suppose it could be.
She's keen to set herself up in opposition to the Duke, as both a landowner and a political patron.
I understand. So, Nathaniel Sowerby has escaped from the Duke's captivity into Miss Dunstable's.
Oh, Nat.
I am grateful to her. In truth, I am. After the disaster of my offer of marriage...
My offer of marriage?
I don't think I could have expected very much from Miss Dunstable. I'm grateful to you, too, of course. But I fear Miss Dunstable's assistance can't rescue me now. Too late for that. I tell you, Harriet, my spirit's well nigh broken. Life, for me, is turning very sad.
But that is appalling, Mother. A scandal.
I understand it was of her own doing, Ludovic.
Oh, I'm sure it was. But there is no need, surely, for her to be sacrificed in this manner. Are there no nurses that can be hired? Mother, she is not ill, is she? She has not caught the fever herself.
I have no idea.
Oh, I insist upon knowing. I shall go to Hogglestock first thing tomorrow.
Very well.
And when I see Lucy, what am I to say to her? Assuming, that is, that she's not been taken ill. What am I to say to her, as coming from you?
Ludovic, I have explained it all to Miss Robarts, and to her sister-in-law.
Explained what?
I have told them that I do not think that marriage would bring happiness either to you or to Miss Robarts.
But why have you said this? Why do you think you have the right to decide for me in such a matter? Mother, you must unsay what you have said. You must! What objection do you have to her? What impediment is there? Is it that she has no money?
No, Ludovic. That is not the reason.
Then what is it? Tell me!
Well, if I were forced to put my objection into a single word, I should say that she was...
Yes?
Oh, Ludovic, all I want is for you to be happy.
What is that single word, Mother?
She is... insignificant. She is a very good girl, Ludovic.
Insignificant?
But she is not qualified to fill the high position to which you would exalt her.
She is not insignificant. She is not.
Ludovic, I think perhaps you do not quite understand me.
I know what insignificant means. And I know what you mean, too. You'd have me marry some terrifying Amazon, some pink and white giantess of fashion who likes to frighten lesser folk into their proprieties. Oh. Mother... There is no son in England who is more devoted or dutiful than I, but there are some things which a dutiful son cannot endure. I have chosen Lucy, and no one has the right to stand between us. Oh, Mother, I confess it would pain me if you did not love her. But whether you can love her or not, please, Mother, go to her. Go and hold out your hand to her and ask her to be my wife.
I was so very proud, as much so in my own way as Mr. Crawley of Hogglestock. I had assumed a standing, held my head high, spent time among great people. But where is my pride now? And what will the Arabins and the Grantleys and the Proudies say when they learn that the bailiffs have visited Framley Parsonage? What will Josiah Crawley say? He is a man who is half-starved, whose children are dressed in rags, whose wife, when she is not ill, is nothing but a drudge. But has he ever had the bailiffs visit him?
Mark, the men are here. They're in the dining room.
Yes, I know.
Perhaps you should go and see them, my dear.
What is the use? I shall see them soon enough.
Cook says they're very civil for their line of life and will stay so, she thinks, if they're given some meat for their midday meal and a glass of beer.
Oh, let them eat while the food lasts. I don't suppose the butcher will be sending us any more.
Mark, we owe the butcher nothing.
Not at present, perhaps, but you'll see.
My dearest, you mustn't speak that way. No, Mark, don't turn from me. Who is to comfort us if we cannot comfort each other?
Comfort? How can you think of giving me comfort? I am amazed that you can endure to be in the same room as me. Look around you, Fanny. Look at these things of ours. Things we bought when money was plentiful, or which were given to us by Lady Lufton. Things which are dear to us. And now they are to be scrutinized and catalogued and given a price.
My dearest.
And in short time, they will be taken away.
Come in.
Morning.
Lufton.
I'm sorry to arrive unannounced, but the house is in a state of some confusion.
Yes.
How do you do, Mrs. Robarts? This is all a terrible bore, isn't it? Our gardener gave me the news and I came straight over.
It's not Mark's fault, Lord Lufton.
I'm sure it's not.
Mr. Sowerby has betrayed him.
Believe me, Mrs. Robarts, Mr. Sowerby has betrayed everyone who has ever trusted him. I told you as much a while ago, Mark, did I not?
Yes, Lufton, you did.
But why on earth have you let it go so far? There's no need for the bailiffs, is there?
Mark wouldn't sign any more bills. He was quite determined.
And you were quite right too, Mark. But you could have come to me, surely. Or my mother. Oh, anyway. We'll talk later. Those men I saw on my way in with the big boots and the pens and inkhorns. I must have a word with them before they do any damage.
Archdeacon.
Yes, Susan?
I have just come from speaking with my sister.
Ah, how is Eleanor?
She says she has received a visit from Mrs. Proudie.
Well, many of us must be visited by Mrs. Proudie sometime in our lives.
She says that Mrs. Proudie is spreading a rumour.
Nothing new in that. What is the rumour, my dear?
It concerns Griselda, Archdeacon, and Lord Dumbello.
What?
The rumour has it, Archdeacon, that he has jilted her.
Jilted her? Good heavens!
It is not a rumour, Dr. Grantley. Lord Dumbello has fled the country. He started 4 days ago by way of Boulogne and is now in hiding somewhere on the continent.
Never mind where he has gone to. The story is that he has broken off his engagement to my daughter, and I am asking that this should be denied.
Well, then, you will have to go round to every house in Barchester, for the story, as you put it, has been widely told.
Yes, and at whose instigation, I wonder? My lord.
Dr. Grantley?
The bishop is entirely ignorant of the affair.
Oh, that is quite correct. Entirely ignorant.
You are one of the few, then? How strange, when your own wife has been such an energetic messenger. Dr. Proudie, I must tell you that your wife distinctly mentioned the matter to my sister-in-law, Mrs. Arabin.
But of course! Why should I not distinctly mention it? There are some things which can't be kept under a bushel, Dr. Grantly. And this appears to be one of them.
There are no grounds for the rumour. No grounds at all. And therefore, my lord...
The bishop, as I said, has no knowledge of any of this.
But I do very much hope that it will all be resolved satisfactorily.
Dr. Grantly, I understand your feelings. Considering your daughter's position, the match was a very good one. As regards earthly wealth, I mean... And I therefore do not wonder that you should be grieved at its being broken off.
Mrs. Proudie.
But worldly disappointments can become precious balms, as you perhaps have discovered, Archdeacon, during your career. And I'm sure you will learn how to live with this sorrow.
Now, Mr. Robarts, Ludovic has urged me, for he has a kind heart. A very kind heart, not to be too severe with you. So, all I will say on the matter is this. I hope you and Ludovic have had enough to do with black sheep to last you your respective lifetimes.
I have been very foolish, Lady Lufton. Very foolish, and very wicked.
Very foolish, yes. As has Ludovic. And since it was he, so he tells me, who first introduced you to Mr. Sowerby, and thereby helped to get you into your troubles, I am pleased to hear that he is getting you out of them.
He has been extremely kind, and I told him so 100 times. To be free of the bailiffs is a great relief. But it's understood between your son and me that I intend to hand him back every penny he pays on my behalf.
I'm sure you do. And now I think we should say no more about this wretched business, either now or at any time. Let it never be mentioned again.
Oh, God bless you, Lady Lufton. Fanny and I could never have such a friend as you are.
Thank you. And you know, Mr. Robarts, I would like to be a friend to your sister, too.
I'm sure I shall be able to get about tomorrow, Lucy, dear, and then I need not keep you from your home.
Oh, Mrs. Crawley, you are in a great hurry to get rid of me. I suppose your husband has been complaining again about the cream in his tea. Oh,
you don't know how he speaks of you when your back is turned.
Well, when my back wasn't turned, he told me I was a weaver of falsehoods. Oh. That was with regard to the arrival of the mutton broth, I believe.
And he told me that if he were to write an epic poem about womanhood, he would make you the heroine.
Ah, yes, with a cream jug in my hand.
He says you are an angel, Lucy. And so you have been, a ministering angel and a friend. I'm almost glad that I have been ill, seeing that I have made such a friend on account of it. Now, who's this?
It must be Fanny, with some more mutton broth.
No, my dear, that's not the pony cart. I'd recognise the sound of that by now.
Well, let us see. Oh, good heavens! It's Lady Lufton's carriage!
Oh!
And Lady Lufton is inside it!
Miss Robarts, do take a seat.
Thank you.
My dear, you will, I think... recall our last conversation.
I do recall it, Lady Lufton.
Well, my dear, what I said to you then, I said because I thought it was for the best. You, of all people, will not be angry with me for loving my own son better than I love anyone else.
Oh, no. No, indeed.
He is the best of sons. The very best. And I am certain that he will be the best of husbands, too. It was my fond hope, once, to choose a bride for him. But he has made his own choice. He has chosen someone whose qualities, I confess, I was, in my foolishness, not quick to recognize. But who I now see possesses a strong spirit, a quickness of mind, and a wonderful capacity for selflessness. For these qualities, and many others, my son loves her, and is right to do so. Which is why I am here, Lucy. I have come... I have come to ask you to be his wife. Lucy, my dear, must I go back to him and tell him that there is some objection, some hindrance, other than that stern old mother who thought her only son too precious to be parted with?
No, there is no hindrance.
What shall I tell him, then? Shall I say simply, yes?
Yes, Lady Lufton. Dear Lady Lufton. Simply, yes. How strange it was the following day when I left the parsonage at Hogglestock and was driven to Framley Court and led into the drawing room there. How strange to think that not so many months before I had sat in the corner of that room, sore at heart, because I felt I was no fit companion to those around me.
But things have come to a different pass now. Lady Lufton, of whom Lucy was so much in awe, loves her and cares for her beyond measure. Her son has chosen Lucy, and Lucy is the apple of his eye.
They were married in October, and a splendid affair it was. But before then, there were two other marriages of note. First, that of Lord Dumbello to Miss Griselda Grantly. Rumour has it that there was a marked degree of uncertainty about his marriage prior to the appointed day. But rumour also has it that such uncertainty was thoroughly extinguished after Archdeacon Grantly met with his lordship on foreign soil and had a very serious and useful word with him. As for the second marriage, that was between Dr. Thomas Thorne of Greshamsbury and Miss Martha Dunstable.
Do you remember, at my conversazione, I told you I was losing my capacity for goodness?
Oh, yes, I do remember.
Well, I have every hope of getting it back.
Have you? Oh, I'm very pleased. May I ask by what means?
By being married, of course. To you.
Oh, I see.
You are going to make a decent woman of me. And not before time.
By the way, despite Miss Dunstable's best efforts, I should say Mrs. Thorne's best efforts, Nathaniel Sowerby lost the seat for West Barsetshire. To Lord Dumbello, in fact. And that, I think, has quite knocked the stuffing out of Mr. Sowerby. He still lives at Chaldecott's, of course. But there is no Chaldecott set to gather in that ancient house. No clever talk or mocking laughter. Those days are gone for him and for me. And I, at least, do not regret their passing.
Adolphus, my dear fellow. Adolphus?
Bernard, how good to see you.
Just the two back, sir.
Just the two.
Did you have a pleasant trip?
Very. I dozed almost the entire way. Is it far from here?
No, no. A mere 5 miles, that's all, and you shall be at Allington.
The Small House at Allington by Anthony Trollope. Dramatised for radio by Martin Wade. Starring Alex Jennings as Adolphus Crosby, Julia Ford as Lily Dale, and Jamie Glover as Johnny Eames, with Richard Vernon, Brenda Blethyn, Leslie Sharp, and Jeremy Clyde.
You know, I was fostering an irrational hope that your rural breezes would be cooler, but it's as hot here as it was in town.
I fear so. Adolphus, I hope you won't be terrifically bored here.
Huh?
The country's one thing when it's a 3-week gathering at Courcy Castle or wherever, but...
Bernard, work has been so hectic, I shall be a little glad if I'm a little bored. I'm good and ready for it. I take it this is Allington up ahead?
Correct.
Ah, and is that the house?
That is the house. The great house.
Hmm.
Not big enough, you think, to deserve such a title.
Oh, I think it looks a very fine house, and very old, too.
It's early Stuart's. It is called Great, to distinguish it from the other house nearby.
The small house?
That's right. You can just see it next to the road, but we pull off here. Come on. You see the little footbridge?
Yes.
Well, that's where the garden of the small house begins.
Ah.
It's all part of the estate.
Who lives in the small house?
My aunt and her two daughters.
Your aunt?
There was a third Dale brother, you understand. The youngest. He died.
And it's his widow who lives in the small house?
That's right. She has it from uncle rent-free.
Has your uncle ever thought of marrying?
I believe he did once. Thought of it very seriously. But found his plea rejected and never thought to try elsewhere. He's over at Hammersham, by the way, performing his duties as grand juror. You'll meet him at dinner.
You must be a very busy man with all your commitments.
Yes, yes, busy enough. What is it you do?
I work in the General Committee Office.
The what?
The General Committee Office, Uncle. Whitehall.
I'm a senior clerk.
Nothing to do with the army, then. I assumed you were a colleague of Bernard.
A colleague? No, sir. I count your nephew as a friend.
We met at my club.
Oh, yes, your club. Well, Mr. Crosby, what have you accomplished since you arrived?
Hardly anything, sir. And I've enjoyed it greatly. Talked, walked in the garden.
We saw Bell and Lily. And Crosby was introduced.
Fine girl, Bell.
Which one was the
slightly taller?
Prettier, too. Fine girl, Bell. As I've told Bernard 1,000 times...
What do you mean, a mere clerk? You may as well call Bernard a mere officer, or uncle a mere squire.
Bell, you know exactly what I mean. It isn't much in a man to be in public office, but Mr. Crosby, it strikes me, gives himself airs.
I don't think he gives himself airs. I think that... Look, anyway, you're not implying, surely, that Mr. Crosby is the same as Johnny Eames.
Well, Johnny Eames is a mere clerk. And Mr. Crosby is, I don't know, a mere clerk. He's older than Johnny, that's all. Been longer at it, earns a bit more money, no doubt.
No doubt, Lily. I'm not in Mr. Crosby's confidence.
No.
But from what Bernard has said, I understand that he is pretty nearly the management of the General Committee Office. 6 or 7 young men under him. So one cannot call him a mere clerk.
One could call him a swell.
Well, I wish you wouldn't, Lily. I don't like slang words.
But he is, isn't he? A swell, I mean.
He's a gentleman, and it isn't nice to describe a gentleman as a swell.
Isn't it? Oh, I'd so like to be nice, if I knew how. Now, what else is Mr. Crosby, apart from a gentleman?
Nothing more.
Oh, come, Bell. He's an Apollo, that's for certain.
Apollo? Who's talking about Apollo?
Lily, that foolish tongue of yours.
Morning. May we come in?
Of course. Good morning, Bernard. Good morning, Mr. Crosby.
Good morning to you both. Apollo, let me think, as sweet and musical as bright Apollo's lute strung with his hair.
Have we arrived at an inconvenient moment?
No, not really. How are you both?
Fine. I, at least, have never felt better.
Adolphus claims he's not yet tired of the country.
And I have been here almost 24 hours.
Mama is in the garden.
Ah.
She's picking peas with her sunbonnet on.
Well, then, let us go and help her.
Or we could play croquet.
Yes, why not?
Croquet? Now, I haven't had a game of croquet yet.
Since you've not been here 24 hours, Mr. Crosby, I might suspect you of being an enthusiast, if you had.
Are you a croquet player, Mr. Crosby?
Oh, I tried to be on one occasion. Failed quite abjectly.
Oh, well, then, with respect, Mr. Crosby, you, perhaps, should partner Lily. She is the queen of the croquet ground.
Good shot, Lily.
Thank you, cousin.
Oh, I don't know why you should receive praise for such ruthlessness.
Nor I.
Before I forget, Uncle has invited you all to dinner tonight.
Oh, that's very kind.
Close, Bernard.
You'll ask your mother?
Oh, yes. Your turn, Mr. Crosby. But she won't come. There will be peas to be eaten, you know.
Their mission, Mama.
Their avowed mission.
Was to invite us over to dinner at the Great House.
Oh, very kind of them. Very kind of your uncle.
Will you go to the Great House for dinner, Mama?
I don't think so. After all, there are peas to be eaten, are there not?
Oh, Mama.
I'm sorry, but I was only on the other side of the wall, you know, while you were playing croquet. I was picking peas, as it happens. Anyway, you are right, my dear, I will stay at home. And eat these peas, no doubt.
But before then, I will get out your best frocks, give them a good ironing, and see that they're just as they should be for this evening.
Oh, dearest Mamma. And how long is Mr. Crosby to be amongst us?
Only a few days, I think.
He's on a short sort of leave at present. He has another 2 months, just whenever he likes it. Ah. Poor Johnny Eames, you know, has only a month, so he's much better off than Johnny.
Oh, yes, indeed. Much better off. Poor Johnny Eames.
It is 2 years now since I came to town from Guestwick. 2 years almost to the week, I think. And what have I managed? Very little of interest either to myself or anyone else. I have worked mainly, played a little. I have been lodged in Mrs. Roper's place in Burton Crescent, north of Russell Square. I have got up each weekday morning and walked with my friend Cradell to the income tax office in Somerset House. I wonder whether a fellow could get into a club.
A club?
Not a swell one, just a regular club. Evenings at Mrs. Roper's, I find, can be uncommon slow.
Oh, you're right, Johnny, they can. Well, I thought you didn't mind the place quite so much since Amelia came home.
Amelia? What's Amelia to me?
Well, a deuced fine girl, so you said, more than once. And told her too, I believe. Or something like it.
Yes, that was... But never mind what I told her. In comparison with...
The renowned L.D. of Allingham, yes.
Allington. In comparison with her... Well, there is no comparison. Golden dross. I tell you, Cradell...
Hey, mind yourself!
When that girl marries, it'll be all up with me.
What? You'll cut your throat?
No, I shan't do that. But it'll be all up with me just the same.
Well, you could always marry her yourself.
No, Cradell. I couldn't. Not on £90 a year.
Well, she could wait, couldn't she? I'd ask her, and no mistake. If you love a girl, it's no good going on like this.
No. I don't suppose it is.
I am not ungrateful, Belle. But he mustn't think, because all the place is his, that he can say what he likes.
I imagine, in his way, that Uncle Christopher was being polite.
Polite?
Of course he was. Making a point of regretting Mama's absence when, in fact, he feels far more comfortable on these occasions without her.
And she, no doubt, feels far more comfortable staying at home. And no doubt he knows it.
Tut, tut.
He shouldn't dissemble. And he shouldn't be so disagreeable about it, too.
Aha!
Adolphus, what are you doing?
Well, since we carelessly left out the equipment...
Oh, Mr. Crosby.
We might have a game. I feel I'm much improved.
Do you think there's enough light?
Oh, there is for Mr. Crosby. He plays independently of the hoops. Gentlemen, we must take our leave of you.
Oh, must you? It is so stupid going to bed.
Yes, but people in the country are rather stupid, you know.
Come, Adolphus, lay down your mallet. We'll go back and smoke a cigar.
Oh, if only Mama had set aside a little smoking room in the house, then we wouldn't have to be stupid at all. Good night, Bernard. Good night, Mr. Crosby.
Yes, good night to you both. And thank you for escorting us home.
Our very real pleasure.
Good night.
Bernard?
Yes, old chap.
You may consider this a little indelicate.
Try me.
With regard to your cousins, or rather one of them, don't answer if you'd rather not, but do you have hopes in that direction?
You mean marriage, I take it? Well, Uncle Christopher has hopes, certainly. For me and the elder girl, that is. I don't pretend to be very much in love with her. Not my way, you know. But she's pretty.
Yes, she is.
And she's as good as gold.
Yes, I'm sure. So is Lily, of course.
Yes, indeed. Well, though, compared with Belle, she...
Has an independent mind and is prepared to speak it.
Precisely. Yes, I suppose the match will come off, barring unexpected obstacles. Are you,
Declaring an interest? No, Bernard. Not with regard to Belle.
I think perhaps you're rather too hard on Mr. Crosby.
Oh, she's been going on like that all evening.
I'm not hard on him. We're very good friends.
Good friends, indeed.
Belle, I hope you're not jealous.
I should hope not, too.
Oh, Belle, take no notice of me. I don't care a buttercup about Mr. Crosby.
Nor do I.
Well, in a way, I do care about him. He's such a duck of an Apollo. And I don't think it's fair of him to disturb us all in our quiet little ways and then tell us he'll be flying off. I haven't even had time to count his rays.
When does he go?
The day after tomorrow.
But he says he shall perhaps come again, at the end of August, when he takes his long leave.
Yes. I wonder whether a certain gentleman at Guestwick will like it if he does return.
Lily?
It doesn't matter, Mama. But I have asked you not to mention him, Lily. Not in that way, at least. Yes, you have. Though I don't know why I shouldn't mention him, either in that way or any way. Dr. Crofts is the finest fellow I ever saw, and Mr. Apollo Crosby is nothing to him. Turn and smile on Dr. Crofts. That's what I'd like to see. And I'm sure Mama would like it too.
Lily?
Not that you've ever said anything in that regard, Mama. Well, not in my hearing, at least.
But I think what you've said in that regard, Lily, is more than enough.
Yes, I've finished. I promise. Sweet sister, forgive me.
I forgive you.
You're leaving tomorrow night, then, Mr. Eames?
Yes, by the mail train.
Well, seems to be a fascinating place, Allington. You couldn't lose a single hour, could you, in hurrying from here?
Amelia, I told you very plainly I was to take my leave in October.
You did, but I hadn't realised you're quite so desperate to get away.
I've been 12 continuous months in London. I'm keen to see my mother, my friends.
Your friends? One friend, and a very good friend too, I think. L.D. are her initials, I believe. Mr. Eames, you've not been fair on me. You should never have said those things.
What things?
You should never have written them either.
Well, perhaps.
When all the time you had a special friend waiting for you down in the country.
Waiting for me?
Oh, yes. Very easy for a man to laugh. But I hate such ways. I hate them.
Oh, here you are, Amelia. And Mr. Eames, too. Good evening, Mr. Eames.
Good evening, Mrs. Roper.
There is company next door, Mr. Eames, in the drawing room. Your colleague, Mr. Cradell, and Mrs. Lupex, and Miss Bruce, of course. If you'd care to join them before dinner?
Thank you, Mother, but Mr. Eames and I would prefer to converse in private.
I see. Dinner will be served in 15 minutes, Mr. Eames.
She worries about you, Amelia.
About me? Oh, no. What worries my mother is that word will get back to yours, and that as a result your mother will decide this isn't a suitable place, and mine will lose a lodger. But Mama needn't fret on that score, need she, Johnny? Since it's all over between us.
All over?
Well, it is, isn't it? But I... Look here, Johnny. I'm not going to make a fool of myself for any man. If it's to be all over between us, then tell me. Say the word, Johnny. That's all you have to do.
Amelia...
It's true, of course, that I have your promise. Have it in writing. But I'd scorn to take advantage. Just say the word. Say that L.D. is more to you than I am. I won't stand in your way. I'll leave the house, go back to the milliners in Manchester, though it is beneath my birth. Well, sir?
Amelia...
Yes?
You know I love you.
What about L.D.?
Heavens! I can't help it if you choose to believe all the nonsense that Cradell puts into your head. I mean, it isn't my fault if you're jealous over a couple of letters of the alphabet.
You really love me.
Of course I love you.
Oh, Johnny! And you'll be true to me. True to me forever.
Oh, yes. That goes without saying. Thanks for coming along.
Oh, my pleasure. If you ask me, Johnny, it's a good thing you're leaving us for a spell. You could get yourself entangled with Miss Amelia Roper if you don't watch your step.
No, a fellow has to go through that sort of thing, you know.
Perhaps. But sometimes, if he tries it too often, a fellow never gets out again. Where would you be if she got a promise of marriage from you in writing?
I'd be in breach of promise, I suppose.
Or married, and miserable. Knowing you, Johnny, you'd be true to your word if you'd given it.
I might.
There hasn't been anything like that, has there?
A written promise? Good heavens, no. Oh, this looks good, though, coming from you. You're the one that wants to watch his step.
Me? Oh, you mean with Mrs. Lupex? Well, it's a little bit of nonsense, that's all. Doesn't mean a thing.
I don't suppose it does, Cradell, to you or me. But she said more than once that her husband's the jealous sort. And he drinks, too. That's clear enough. You might not like it if he cut up rough.
No, he won't. He's got no cause. You'd better go, or you'll miss your train.
Yes. I might write.
To me?
To you.
Well, if you write to Amelia, be careful. Oh, my regards to L.D.
Thank you.
I was in Guestwick by 4. Mother was up to welcome me home. We talked. I slept only a little, was up again by 8. Decided before noon that I would go over to Allington, to the small house. Credell, dear fellow, I don't know what I had in mind. Perhaps I hoped to speak in private with L.D. I don't mean asking her to marry me, but telling her of my feelings for her. Which, to be truthful, I've never really managed. Not in so many words. Though she must, I suppose, have some idea. Or perhaps I intended it to be nothing more than a social call. You'll have to make your own judgment. But I was very much on edge. That much I can tell you. Usually I would walk the distance to Allington, but on this occasion I decided to borrow a horse. Wore the spurs you helped me choose in Piccadilly. And, for the first time, the kid gloves that Mother gave me last Christmas. I reached my destination, tethered the horse, took a deep breath, was shown into the drawing room.
John! Oh, it's good to see you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And you both?
We are fine. Aren't we, Belle?
We thought we might have a visit today. Heard from your mother that you were coming home.
Yes.
I expect you've deserved a rest. Are they working you hard, John?
Oh, yes. But not too hard. How is Lily?
Oh, Lily is exceedingly well, thank you.
Is she... Am I likely to see her?
She's in the garden. She'll be here directly.
She walked over to the great house with Mr. Crosby.
Mr. Crosby? I tell you, Credell.
But she'll be coming straight back.
I tell you, my heart turned cold when I heard that name. Mother had mentioned him in the morning, had said how grand and fashionable he was, that he was staying at the great house.
Lily will be delighted to see you, John. It's been some time.
Yes. Yes, it has.
John, you're a dear friend of Lily's, so I'm sure she won't object to my giving you the news. Mr. Crosby, a friend of Bernard's, came down here for a few days in the summer, and then came again for a longer stay. And during this time, he and Lily have become very fond of each other. So much so, John, that they've now decided to become engaged to be married.
Engaged?
And we're all very pleased at the match.
Yes, I'm sure.
No one could be nicer than Mr. Crosby. We've often spoken to him about you. He'll be so happy to know you, Johnny.
Oh, he won't want to know much about me.
Well, here's Lily now, coming across the lawn.
Then I'd better go.
John!
Goodbye, Mrs. Dale. Goodbye, John. Belle. Don't say anything about this to Lily. Please, don't.
Johnny!
I think I almost ran out of the house. Got to my horse and left. You see, I've been defeated, Credell. And I can't endure facing her. Not yet. I remember very little of the ride back to Guestwick. The horse knew how to make the journey better than I. My thoughts were entirely on my miserable state. Well, you'll say, you never promised yourself any success with LD, and that's true. But now that she's as good as married, whatever tiny speck of hope that was left is as good as gone. And I feel as dejected as I would have been if I'd had every chance of winning her. Oh, Credell, I'm almost tempted to come straight back to town.
Mama, Adolphus says he would be delighted to call in for tea tomorrow.
Very well, my dear.
We will be delighted too.
And who do you think has called in just now?
Belle.
Someone has been here. Well, whoever it was didn't stay long.
It was Johnny Eames.
Oh. Oh, why didn't he wait for me?
We told him you were out.
Does he know?
Yes, Lily. He knows.
I am engaged to be married. Engaged to be married. So damn sudden. And so damned unexpected for a man so well established in bachelorhood. I had vowed, and it seemed almost a sacred oath, that I would not marry unless I had the money. And marrying for money alone was, of course, out of the question. And now, I am engaged. I suppose I might have read the signs. I liked Lily well on my first visit, and it was her charms, nothing else, which encouraged me to visit Allington again, when I might otherwise have gone to Lady Hartletop's or to Montgomery Dobbs' place in Scotland or Courcy Castle. But I never guessed it would come to this. Never foresaw. And when I kissed her, and took her in my arms, and asked her, oh, it was very strange. As if another Crosby were doing these things. She's a fine girl, though. A treasure. And I'm a damned lucky man.
Have a cigar, Adolphus.
Ah, much obliged. What was the amount, if you don't mind me asking?
What amount, old chap?
The annuity.
Oh, 800.
Oh, that's decent enough, Bernard.
Yes, conditional upon my marrying Belle, of course. Belle knows nothing about the plan, by the by, and nor does her mother. As you say, though, it's decent enough. I told the governor I simply couldn't do it for less, and he agreed.
You and your uncle have a good relationship.
Oh, yes. No nonsense about love and duty. He's the owner, I'm the heir, and we make sure we get on.
What about Lily? What will your uncle do for her?
Well, that's more than I can tell you. Why don't you ask him? He's a plain man, likes plain business.
Yes. I suppose you couldn't have a word, could you, Bernard?
No, I don't think I could. No. Haven't you talked to him at all about money?
No, not as such.
What about when you told him you wanted to marry?
Well, no, I was simply seeking his approval, not inquiring about financial prospects.
I'd ask him as soon as you can. Can't hurt. Can't hurt you, that is. Might not do me much good. Every shilling Lily gets will come out of my pocket sooner or later. But I'm not the sort to care about that, as you know.
I'll say good night then, Mama.
Good night, Belle.
You're not unhappy, are you, Mama?
Unhappy? No, truly I'm not. I'm happy for your sister, happy for them both. I am.
Well, then. And, Mama, I'm sure she would not have become fond of any man unless he had given her proper reason.
Yes, I thought the same.
Of course you did. And so the matter has taken its rightful course. You do like Mr. Crosby, don't you, Mama?
I do. Oh, I hope I do. At first I could hardly bring myself to believe that he was good enough for her. But all mothers feel that way, I suppose, when their daughters are... Oh, I will like him, Belle. I will learn to like him. For Lily's sake.
Might I ask if there's a problem, Uncle?
No, not a problem. It had simply occurred to me that, particularly since Lily and your friend are engaged, it might be time if it was settled with you and Belle.
Ah, yes. Is there any hurry about it, sir?
Yes, there is. Well, not hurry. I hate hurry in all things. Dispatch. No wish to push you, mind, if you don't like your cousin.
Oh, but I do like her. I do. Only I have a sort of feeling that this kind of thing grows best by degrees. I share your dislike of being in a hurry.
Well, enough time has been taken, in my view. I would like you to bear in mind, Bernard, that I am intending to make a great sacrifice of income on your behalf.
I'm sure I'm very grateful.
I'm not disposed to act as parent to both the girls. And besides, Crosby is a man of quite reasonable income. The money I am setting aside is for you and your wife, that is, Belle. Of course, if I knew you had no wish to marry her, then I would find it necessary to alter the arrangement. Perhaps to take account of the younger daughter. Hence, you see, the need for dispatch.
Yes, I see.
I'm going indoors now.
Yes, I think I'll set things in motion, sir. Propose to Belle at the first available, that is, appropriate opportunity. I've no wish to postpone the matter any longer than necessary.
Nor should you, Bernard, nor should you. If your mind is quite made up.
Oh, bravo, Lily.
Well played.
Thank you.
She's been devastating this morning, has she not?
She certainly has.
And Adolphus, you have sharpened your game, you know, since first you trod this lawn.
True enough. You shouldn't be partners, really.
Ah, too late to change that now, I'm afraid. Well, Bernard, it was our aim, as it were, to go out shooting today.
Oh, no, you mustn't go yet. An army cannot march in an empty stomach. I'll tell Mama that the two of you are having lunch here.
She is mine. She is in love with me. She calls me only half facetiously. Her Apollo. but she is not really part of the plan. What does that mean, then? Is the plan outmoded? I was not to marry, or if I was to marry, it would have been in different circumstances. Well, I only have myself to blame, if indeed blame is to be attached. And all is not yet lost, regarding the financial side. I've not yet tackled the squire, as I should have done. I was very weak there. But damn it, I couldn't decently ask about Lily's money before I declared my intentions. And once I had declared them, it was surely too late anyway. She has a beautiful face. Well, a pretty face. And a pretty wit, too. And she loves me, she says, and will do so, she says, with all her heart and strength. And I believe she will. But I had a plan. I had a position. I shall have to withdraw my name from the club. Damn! Damn!
Oh! What time did we say we'd meet them?
5:30, Bernard.
And, what time is it?
It's not 4:15. You're very eager to make the rendezvous.
Well, I don't like to keep the ladies waiting.
And you were, I thought, extraordinarily attentive to the elder sister this morning, in your way. Are you planning to offer her a suggestion?
Well, sooner or later, I suppose, one must bow to the inevitable.
She's a lucky girl.
I hope she'll think so.
She should, Bernard, with 800 a year pinned to her skirt.
Yes.
Your uncle, you know, has still said nothing to me about Lily's fortune.
Lily's fortune? Does she have a fortune?
Nothing of her own, just like her sister. But you know what I mean. Heavens, the squire can hardly expect, as a man of the world, that I would marry his niece without some kind of settlement.
Well, whether Uncle Christopher's a man of the world or not, I don't know, but you are, Crosby. You should have asked him about this settlement, if you thought there was any room for such a question.
Any room? My word, you're a cool fellow. You led me to believe that your uncle...
I told you nothing, not until you were fully engaged to Lily, when I thought that my opinion on the matter could have no influence on your conduct. At that stage, I admit, I indicated that the governor might do something for her. Or at least I didn't rule out the possibility.
And now your opinion's changed?
Yes. Though without sufficient ground, I'm sure.
It'll be hard on me if you're right.
Well, disappointing, perhaps.
I call it hard. Confounded hard.
Well, call it what you wish, but you can't claim that anyone has ill-used you.
Let's go.
You must forgive us. We're late.
Well, I said you would be. How tiresome to be proved right.
You don't look much burdened.
Well, the birds are scarce, I'm afraid.
What? Not one partridge?
Not one, Lily.
Good heavens. Well, perhaps, my Apollo, you should have been armed with bow and dart.
Well, we covered 15 miles of ground.
15? You townsfolk. Uncle Christopher would think nothing of 15 miles.
Yes. Uncle Christopher, it's clear, is made of sterner stuff. It should have been an excellent cure for ill humour. To have her standing at the gate to meet me, jibing at me, but gently about the afternoon's net return, fixing her face upon me, dazzling me with those bright, round eyes, resting her hand in mine. By odds, she is the nicest girl I've ever seen. And yet in my heart, there is a blackness still. And she, poor thing, is the cause. It is none of her fault, or my own doing, in a sense. Though I don't think at all that I have been treated fairly. Everything I have striven for is to go. I must become humdrum and domestic. I must leave my place in Mount Street, live in a small house full of babies. Oh, Lily! She will never know the misery she has brought about. I'll make sure of that. And she will, in herself, compensate for it to some degree, I am sure. For she is a treasure. But she will not compensate enough. Of course, I couldn't desert her. I have made a commitment, and I shall stick by it. Too late to get out now. I shall marry, and there'll be an end to me. But I could at least postpone the wedding. Give myself another 2 years of freedom, continue at the club for that time, some comfort there. But I haven't been treated fairly. It isn't right for a man to put forward his niece under false pretenses. and I'll tell the squire as much tonight. Sir, I've been thinking a good deal about my intended marriage.
That's natural enough.
Yes, by George, it is. A man doesn't take a step like this without finding he's got something to think about.
I suppose not. Though I was never in the way of getting married myself.
I'm the luckiest fellow in the world to have found such a girl as your niece.
You're right. She's as good as gold.
She is, yes. And it seems to me, therefore, that something ought to be said regarding support for her. Proper support, to keep her in the manner to which she's accustomed.
She's never been used to expense. Her mother's not a rich woman.
But living here on the estate...
I don't believe it has made her extravagant.
Absolutely not. Nor her sister.
Oh, that goes without saying.
She has the occasional use of one of the ponies here, but I don't suppose for that reason that she'll expect a horse in the park.
I hope not. But, well, the long and short of it is this, sir. Am I to expect any accession of income with my wife?
As I have already mentioned, her mother is not a...
Oh, I wouldn't take a shilling from her.
Then that settles it.
The port rests with you, Crosby.
Forgive me. Actually, sir, my inquiry related to you, not Mrs. Dale.
Me?
I wish to learn whether you intended to do anything for your niece.
If you are referring to Lillian, and if you mean in the way of giving her a fortune, the answer is, I intend to do nothing at all.
Then I suppose we understand each other. At last.
Why could we not have done so at first? I don't know what you mean by the phrase, at last, unless it be to give offence.
Oh, I simply assumed, sir, that you had intended to treat your nieces, both of them, as though they were your daughters.
But you have made a mistake, and you have no good cause, as far as I can see, for doing so. You were under no delusion about my plans, were you, when you proposed to Lillian?
No, sir, I was not.
Good. Then no great harm has been done.
Indeed. You may have misunderstood me, sir. My hopes were never very high, but I thought it right to discover your intentions.
I see. Well, now you know them. I trust that it will make no difference to the girl.
My own dearest John. You know, it feels so strange to write these words. And yet you are my dearest, are you not? And I am yours. Let me assure you, my own, that there is no room for jealousy in this breast. I have too much confidence in your honour for that, and too much confidence in my, well, I would say my own charms, except you would call me vain. I shall count the minutes till I get your reply, and shall envy the postman who will have your letter before it will reach me.
I would send my love to your dear mamma, if I only knew her, as I hope I shall do one day. No, no! I would send it to L.D. also. Send her love to my dearest Lily, God forbid! To L.D. also, if you would like to tell her how you and I are situated together. Well, then, there you have it, John Eames. You have lost Lily, and you have won Miss Amelia Roper. Unless you take a walk to the reservoir and throw yourself in. What am I to do? I can't reply in kind. This pit I've dug is deep enough as it is. But I can't tell her I don't like her, either. Yet I ought to tell her something. Show her, at the very least, that I can't go along with it all. That whatever I said, whatever I may have written in that stupid note... Oh, why don't I go along with it all? Now I've lost my sweetest Lily, it's impossible for me to be more wretched. Lily. Lily, what dreams I had. Such a life I planned for you and me. I don't care if I'll be in breach of promise. I can't marry Amelia Roper. Can't. She shall have to bring an action against me. And I shall have to lose my job. Be exposed in the newspapers. Go to prison. Oh, help me, Lord.
Good morning.
Good morning, cousin.
Oh, this is fortunate.
I was thinking the same. I am playing postmistress. See, this one's for you, this one for Uncle Christopher, and this for Adolphus. I'll give you all three, if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, by all means. Invitations?
To a small party today week. I hope you can come.
Oh, I'll be there, most certainly. This is in Crosby's honour, I assume.
Well, to tell the truth, Bernard, not entirely. It's for Johnny Eames as much as anyone. He is a good friend of Lily's. A friend of us all.
Oh, indeed.
But I fear Lily's engagement has rather kept him away from the small house. Mama and I hope that the party will do something to restore easy relations.
I understand.
Oh, Bernard, I do hope my sister will be happy.
Well, she seems happy enough at present.
Yes, but I confess I'm very anxious. I don't imagine that we could have acted otherwise, but it's such a vast trust to put in a man when we don't really know him. You know him, of course.
Yes, well, Lily will be happy enough.
And Adolphus?
Yes, a little short of income at first. Lily will have to eke it out as best she can.
Oh, she won't mind doing that. But if he lets her know that she's reduced him to poverty, she'll be wretched.
Yes. Belle?
Is he extravagant?
No, I shouldn't think so. Belle?
If he makes her unhappy, you know, I shall never forgive you.
Belle, we have always been dear friends, you and I.
Yes, always.
Why should we not be something more than friends?
I don't quite understand.
More than friends, more than cousins. Man and wife. Belle?
You have surprised me.
I hope I haven't pained you. I've been thinking of taking this step for some considerable time, and in the past few days I've tried to give you some indication. The truth is, I can't be like Adolphus. I'm not a lover. But I don't love you any less on that account. I've looked about for a wife, and I've thought that if I gained you, I would be very fortunate.
You are very good to me. Very kind, but... Oh, Bernard, I didn't expect this.
So, will you answer now, or do you need time to consider?
I ought to answer you now, I think.
Oh, no, not if it's to refuse me. You must consider well before you do that. Belle, you ought to know that Uncle wishes this match. He will remove any difficulty about money.
Money is not important.
No, but as you were suggesting, in regard to Adolphus and your sister, one has to be prudent now in our marriage.
Stop, Bernard. It makes no difference.
Well, I wish to acquaint you with the facts, Belle. And Uncle's approval. Now, surely
would it be... would be most welcome, but it cannot influence my decision. I regard you very dearly, very dearly. As a sister regards her brother.
That might be changed.
No, it cannot be changed.
Then you cannot love me?
Not, I think, as you would have me love you. Dear, sweet Bernard, do not think me proud or ungrateful. What you propose is much more than I deserve. But I know my own mind.
May I ask if perhaps any other preference?
There is no other preference.
Uncle will be very much grieved by this.
Well, if that be all, we need not trouble ourselves. He has no right to dispose of our hearts.
I understand the taunt.
There was no taunt, Bernard, or at least none intended.
I need not speak of my own grief. You cannot but know how deep it must be. But as to my uncle, who loves the two of us above any other living beings, your refusal will be a bitter blow. He is a man of few wishes, few desires, and is the more constant in those he has. I fear we shall find him very stern.
Then he will be unjust.
Wait a fortnight.
No.
Wait till Adolphus has gone.
No, no, no. It cannot be. Dearest Bernard, it cannot be.
There's another letter for you today, Johnny.
Oh, thank you, Mother.
What time should we leave this evening?
Whenever you think right, Mother.
So kind of Mrs. Dale to invite us.
Yes.
But then she's a kind lady. It's not bad news, is it, Johnny?
Not sure yet. It's from Joseph Cradell.
You will forgive me, dear Johnny, if I dwell but briefly on your tidings, uncommon sad as they are. But something terrible has happened in Burton Crescent. Something not unconnected, I fear, with the conversation we had just before you left. The affair began yesterday evening, after dinner. I was in the front drawing room. Mrs. Lupex was there, but we were not alone, for dear old Miss Spruce was present too. So there can be no question of anything happening that shouldn't. Not that it ever would. Anyway, as I say, Mrs. Lupex was there, and we were conversing.
Declare, Mr. Cradell, you do say such queer things.
Queer things? I say what's in my mind, that's all.
Miss Spruce, don't you think he says queer things?
Oh, as for me, I'm only an old woman.
But an unmarried man like Mr. Cradell has no business to know whether a married lady is wearing a wig.
Would Lupex like you to wear a wig?
Lupex? He wouldn't know any difference if I wore a plumed helmet on my head, or if I had no head at all. That's what comes of getting married.
Johnny, believe me, I have intended nothing wrong. Not a word was ever spoken to Mrs. Lupex, either on that occasion or any other outside of the drawing room. And within the drawing room there had always been a third party present.
Have you ever contemplated marriage, Miss Spruce?
Oh, as for me, I...
Sir! Sir!
Yes, Jemima?
Oh, Mrs. Lupex.
What's happened, girl?
Your husband, Mrs. Lupex.
He's home, is he?
Yes, Mrs. Lupex.
He's drunk, is he?
Yes, Mrs. Lupex. He's downstairs, and he says he wants to see Mr. Credell.
Oh.
Well, if there's to be blood spilt, I'm leaving the house.
What should I do?
Oh, I'm only an old woman.
You should go down to him, Mr. Credell.
Really?
You little know, Mr. Credell, of what that man is capable when his wrath has been inflamed by wine.